Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing the second half of the interview I did with the extraordinary Harry Bryce. If you were listening last week, you heard the beginnings of this amazing life, the way in which, remarkably, a very young Harry recognized his special instincts, his special talents, his special and unique way of looking at the world, and how he protected them by writing poetry, even though he didn't know it was poetry, maybe even didn't even know what poetry was. In this second half of the interview, you can hear how he turned all of those remarkable instincts into a lifelong career, creating music, dance, theater, all kinds of wonderful and exciting events to share with the rest of the world. And you can hear him talk about the current production of Bubbling Brown Sugar, which he directed for the West Coast Black Theater Troupe in Sarasota, Florida. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Speaking with your voice, about acting in the world in the way that is correct, natural, for you and only you. Maybe you are thinking, who else can I possibly be being? So many of us are acting in some ways like somebody we're not, like somebody we were told we had to be, like somebody we think we're supposed to be, like somebody else is. I know a number of people who say that they did not make choices about what they liked. Did they like this movie? Did they like this food? Did they like this color? Until they heard somebody important to them chime in with their opinion. So they waited till they heard what their mother said or their older brother said, and then later what their peers said, the girls in the sorority, or the boyfriend, or the husband, and even the children. so that they didn't even know what they liked, what they thought, because they were never asking themselves. They were always looking out to see what was the correct thing, the safe thing, the right thing. Does this sound familiar? It might, because I think that most people do this some of the time, at least, and some people do it all of the time. As a psychotherapist, I am confronted every day with people who don't really know who they are, who have buried so deeply what is natural for them in one way or another, what they like, what they think, what they want to do. Unfortunately, childhood is just loaded with opportunities for us to dissemble, to pretend, to deny, and finally to bury so deeply the things about us that we think will not work. They didn't go down well with our parents or our older siblings, our friends, all those people that I mentioned earlier, including teachers, clergy persons, neighbors. Just the list is endless of people who can influence what we think about ourselves and what we are willing to share. Just the other day, a client told me a story about a grandparent and how this grandparent teased her. And the teasing was so embarrassing that the quality over which she was being teased, she managed to bury very, very deeply. And she grew up thinking not only that this particular thing about her was ugly, but that she should not demonstrate her. She should not say what she thinks. And so in situations where she might have an opinion which would go contrary to the group or the person who is important at the moment, she doesn't speak. She can't speak. She gets tongue-tied. She gets flushed. She feels hot. This is not uncommon. It's not unusual. Unfortunately, so many, many, many of us are experiencing this inability to be who we really are. So the Lin Show is about making this point. It's about saying out loud, maybe something happened to you when you were a child. Somebody said something to you, or maybe you were even punished for some way of being, teased, embarrassed, threatened, bullied. We hear so much about that these days. And because children are so flexible and so clever, you manage to first pretend you didn't have this, think this, do this, want this. And then, of course, we get so good at it that we forget we had it. So you come into adulthood without the capacity to speak your truth, without the capacity to even know your truth. I'm fond of saying one of the best ways not to get what you want is not to know what that is. But that is not the best way to live. And whatever it was that you had to hide, it's better if you get it back. It's better if you are your whole you. And when you get that back, not only do you get back the ability to be yourself in the world, but you get back all the energy that you've had to use to suppress that. And you get back your feeling of being okay. Because as long as there's something about you that you know, even unconsciously, that you're not demonstrating, you also have this sense that there's something wrong with you, that you are not okay. So the Lin Show is about making the point, perhaps you did bury something. It's not too late to know it, and it may not be too late to recover it. If you want to talk more about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, where you can also hear all of the shows that I've done, including the one I'm doing right this second, and all of the interviews that I've done, including the one I'm about to air. And as I said in the run-up to the show, this is the second half of my interview with the extraordinary Harry Bryce. And one of the reasons that Harry Bryce is so extraordinary is that he came into this world with an incredibly powerful knowledge of who he is and the ability to protect that. If you were listening to the first half, you heard Harry say that he started to write poetry very, very, very young. Even though he didn't know that it was poetry, he didn't even know what poetry was. He was writing himself. This was his refuge. This was what kept him sane. These are all quotes from that early interview. This is what kept him being Harry. Very, very few people are fortunate enough to have this ability as young as Harry had it. And then he was lucky enough to have a mentor who told him that he was one of a kind. He was unique. He was unduplicatable. And that unduplicatableness was so valuable that he must protect it, that he must never endanger it. So few of us get that. You are special and wonderful, and don't you give up on that. So Harry was able to embrace it, be it. And the result is a delightful, engaging human being who has had his life, the life that he was born to. So again, if you were listening to the first half, you heard the way this was created, the way this grew. And in this half, Harry is talking about what he did with it, the kind of life that he created for himself. And also he's talking about the show that he has recently directed and which is currently running at West Coast Black Theater Troupe, Bubbling Brown Sugar, which I saw. And if there are still any tickets, you should run right out and see, because it is so much fun. Oh my God. Anyway, I have talked enough. I'm going to let Harry talk because he's so interesting. All right, here, Harry Bryce.
So now you're this odd emerging being, mm-hmm. And you don't know that there's a work out there that can use what you are addicted to doing.
Yeah, I didn't know until I began going to the theater.
When was that?
And I was, well, sixth grade, I'm going to say.
12, 13.
Yeah. I first remember my first live performance, mm-hmm. was a trip that my class, we were graduating from the sixth grade going into middle school. Mm-hmm. So our graduation trip was to New York. Mm-hmm. And we got to go to the Christmas pageant that, was it Christmas or Easter? Easter pageant.
Radio City?
Radio City with the Rockettes.
Yes, yes.
And so that was fantastic. And we were, I didn't realize how major it was, but we were invited to the premiere of Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh my goodness.
So Dick Van Dyke was there, and all these people who were in the movie,
right,
Bye Bye Birdie, were there for the, we didn't
for the
realize,
opening.
For the opening, and they came back, we were in a, like, you have a green room.
Right.
They actually put us in the green room, and these people came in. I didn't know that Dick Van Dyke was a star. I didn't know any of these people right. were stars. It was only way later that I came to realize that I had met all of them.
Right.
Anyway, that was my first introduction, and it was just incredible.
Oh, it's mind-blowing.
Yes, it was. But the thing that was most interesting to me about that whole trip was being on the street in the morning, going to breakfast with my class, and we ate at the Kellogg building or something, and they gave us Kellogg cereal or whatever. You know, it was their headquarters or whatever. But on the way, we passed all of these people being literally shoveled up and put in a truck.
What?
And I was so disturbed that by the time we got to where we were supposed to be having fun, I was petrified. Just, I couldn't believe what I had seen. I've never been able to forget it all of these years.
I don't understand. Why was it happening? Do you know?
Well, I was told that every morning they clean the street of people who have
slept
there, died there, whatever. It was the most frightening thing. So, and I literally, a truck that was slowly going, and they would be taking people out of these hallways or whatever, and, you know, some people were on the street. Some of them were dead.
Unbelievable.
So, that was very disturbing.
No kidding.
And, but it was, once again, it was imagery.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And and you don't realize how important all of that is until you are a mature artist and you're having to tell the truth.
Right.
But you can go directly to all of that emotion.
That's right. It's all there.
And visualization. And you can infuse it into what you're doing.
Yeah, it's sense memory.
It's sense memory.
Right.
And so, all of the, what I could call bad experiences, I don't really see them as bad experiences.
No, you use everything.
Everything. I use everything. Yeah. I remember dealing with alcoholism in my community and in my family, and to this day, I don't have tolerance for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know why, and I'm not a prude about anything, but I do know what it feels like to be a creative person and to use your creative talents to honor someone, and they don't show up because they are intoxicated.
Right, right, right.
And that was a Mother's Day present that I gave, and my mother didn't show up.
Ah, ooh. Yeah.
Neither did my father, but they were, you know, a pair.
Right, right.
And it took me a long time.
Right.
To forgive them.
Right.
I had to learn about forgiveness.
And the disease.
And the disease. And I could not hold it against them once I had the information.
You knew. Right.
But I was 17.
Yeah, right.
Just getting ready to graduate from high school. It was a project that I worked on, and I was having this poetry reading at the university, and it was on Mother's Day, and it was to honor my mother, and blah, blah, blah. It was a big deal for me.
Oh, God.
And it took me a while to realize that it was not about me.
Right. That's right. Well, that's part of growing up.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but then I just felt I had been done wrong.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't realize that there were other lives.
Yeah.
At
it didn't have anything to do with you.
Nothing at all.
Right.
Nothing
right.
at all. But that's what you have to understand when you're working with 17-year-olds.
That they don't get it.
They don't get that.
Right.
They don't get that.
Right.
And you can't hold that against them.
No, because that's part of being 17.
Exactly.
Okay, so by 17, you're doing a poetry reading. You already know you're a poet.
I'm a published poet.
You're a published poet. Jesus.
By then.
All right. So then did you Did you study acting? Did you study dance?
I did not. I studied dance. I didn't have an
opportunity. I mean, except with your sister?
Right. Yeah, no. Later on, I was a late bloomer in dance because I didn't get a chance to study as a little kid. But I studied dance, you know, fiercely for several years just trying to catch up.
Catch up. Right.
And I studied enough to realize where I fit into the scheme of things and that it was not classical ballet that I wanted to spend my life doing. It was a tool that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that. And I got then I realized that it was like everything else. In dance, there's all of these flowers. And they're all different colors, and they grow differently, and everything, and they, you know, different bees and things come to pollinate, mm-hmm. you know, it's all that. So I realized that there's modern dance, there's postmodern dance,
there's jazz, and all of this.
And that was what was fascinating to me, and that I had this whole world that I could communicate through.
Right.
And because I've started as a storyteller.
Yes.
I realized that through dance, I could tell any story I wanted to tell.
Yes.
And so I put all my time and energy into dance and, you know, found the niche that pleased me the most. And that was modern dance. And so I studied Graham and Lewitsky and Horton and all of that so that I would have all of that foundation to work with. And eventually taught it, you know, on the university level and, you know, well, I taught that theater and dance for years. But that's beside the point. What I was saying, though, was my introduction to dance was this idea that I could continue to use the words that I was familiar with and I could tell stories. And because I was drawn to painting, I had always painted, I was able to realize that that was my brush and paint mm-hmm. and canvas. And so I spent many years doing that, but I called it dance theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so my company was the Harry Bryce Dance Theater, African-American Dance Theater.
Where were you based in?
I started in Memphis, Tennessee, right out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Reformed my company in Richmond, Virginia, which was my home. And I went back there because I had not spent any adult years there. And so, therefore, had not made any contribution to where I came from.
Uh-huh.
So I went back and spent 5 years there and reestablished my company, and it did very well and opened the studio and taught and did all that stuff and was a fully engaged artist within that community
mm-hmm.
and helped to grow some things. And then I had an opportunity to come to Florida to work with Vinette Carroll at her theater. I had been an admirer of Vinette Carroll's work for years mm-hmm. and years. Never dreamed that I would actually work side by side with her creating theater. And so I went there and worked as her choreographer in residence for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she was establishing a theater company in Fort Lauderdale. And after I did my stint there, I moved to Atlanta. And that's when I reestablished my dance company there, because I was just working as a choreographer for mm-hmm. Vinette Carroll. Reestablished the company, it was a huge, huge success. And I started almost immediately after I got there teaching dance and theater at Spelman and Morehouse College. But so I spent time there teaching and running my dad's company. And then an opportunity came up to create a theater company in Memphis, Tennessee, which was where I went to school. And had spent my first 10 years, my first dance company in Memphis. So I said, wonderful. That's the opportunity I've been working for.
Right.
And so I went to Memphis, established the Memphis Black Repertory Theater, and did 5 seasons, fully produced seasons. Almost every one of the shows won all the awards.
Oh.
It was just a glorious time, you know, glorious time, you know, period. There were issues around this theater company. By that fifth year, we had grown so quickly that the community and the board that we had developed were not growing with the theater.
Yeah.
And we were at a point where we were actually, you know, working with an architect and all that to build a theater and raise the money to build it. And those who were closest to the center got cold feet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very common.
And, but we were in a great position to do what but at the time, and I said, this is the story of my life. Because my ideas were so, they said I was kind of loose in the head.
Right. Because they couldn't see it.
They couldn't see it. Now there's a theater company there called Hattie Lou Theater. They have broken ground and building this on the footprint that I was given. So, all that I know is that what I did was open eyes.
That's right.
And
you planted the seed.
I planted the seed. I'm so glad that that's happened.
Right.
So, and even though others, you know, are so, you know, feel so badly that Memphis Black Repertory Theater isn't the one. You got to understand that that was not.
It wasn't time.
It wasn't time, and it wasn't for Memphis Black Repertory to do. Even if they are building from the blueprint and plans that we paid for. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
So,
they couldn't do it if you hadn't done that.
Exactly.
So that's what your job was.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I understood that.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I know you did.
I totally understood that. And it was the time that I had there was, we did absolutely wonderful work. And so, you know, I'm very proud of of all of that, and I'm just glad that the seed was planted.
Yeah.
So,
you know, how did you wind up here? Are you living in Sarasota?
I'm living in Sarasota now, but I have always worked in other places. Mm-hmm. I've always gone to other places to direct.
Right.
And I was living in Daytona Beach, had moved there from Memphis when I left Memphis, and was working at Seaside Music Theater.
Mm.
And I went to FAMU, Florida A&M University, to direct a show for their department. And I just happened to be friends with the person who is over that department. And he and Nate knew each other. And Nate was beginning this theater. Mm-hmm. And so the two of them talked, and he said, the person you need to come and help you make that happen is Harry Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And he will at least help you develop the standard of theater that you want your theater to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically what I've done. And so I would come in and out and direct shows for the theater.
Right.
I wasn't living here at the time. And then when I, you know, decided, okay, well, you know, it's time for you to find
settle down
a place that you want to just be home and you can still
you
go
can travel,
you
right.
Can
exactly
travel,
right.
Yeah. And I started thinking about it, and the only place that I was ever just totally comfortable mm-hmm. in every way was here.
I know it.
And so I said, well, this makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. And I love the people and mm-hmm. and the environment, the climate,
the commitment to the arts.
The total commitment to the arts. And I also wanted to be a part of helping Nate realize his vision. Mm-hmm. And I know how important that is.
Yes.
I truly know.
Yes.
And so to be a part of his realization, I love, mm-hmm. because I want him so to know thoroughly what that is, mm-hmm. Because it is the completion
yes.
of you as
yes.
as
yes. yes as what you are.
As what you are.
I know. That's
and
wow.
And so I decided that, you know, you need to, everybody should figure that out for themselves. Where do you want to be to make a difference in someone else's dream? Not your own. I've dreamed and I have fulfilled dreams of mine. And you know, some people in this business, their dream is to go to New York and be on Broadway and do the, and that's all fine and well.
Oh.
But that's all fine and well. But that was never my ultimate goal. I went to New York and studied.
Yes, and worked.
And
you
worked.
Wanted to work, right?
Yes, and it was not the idea that you get to be on Broadway and all of that, or be in a famous company like the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater or something. That's all fine, but that's some people's journey.
Right.
And I knew that my journey had to do with what I could learn from all of that.
Yes.
Because I have my own voice.
Yes. Yes.
And so my voice will never be anyone else's, and I don't see it that way. So, not that if they call me from the Ailey Company and said, we'd like for you to come and set a piece on our company, I'd be right there.
Of course, of course.
But it would be because they have agreed to allow me
your voice
to have my voice.
Yes, right, 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 right.
And otherwise, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And so if I can't have my voice, you know, at the Schubert, then I'm not interested. So, and I feel fine about my voice in, you know, Biloxi,
well,
Mississippi.
Because it is your individuality which you honor.
Absolutely.
Right.
No
and
question.
Nothing else matters.
Nothing else
yes,
matters.
Yes, I love it. I love it.
And so
you've been true to that straight through.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, said, well, that's probably the reason that you're not a millionaire.
Well,
and I said, are you kidding? That's just paper.
Right, right, right.
That has nothing to do. I'm richer than anybody you know.
Right, right, right.
You don't. You can't get enough.
That's right. That's right. That's right. You can't count
you
what
can't
you got.
Count. And yeah. And I enjoy everything. I don't feel that there's any place that I can't go.
Or anything you can't do that you want to.
Or do or experience.
That's right.
And, you know, I think that that's all something that is made up. And it's primarily made up to exclude people.
Well, I think, and then maybe you won't agree, but I think people desire that.
Sure.
Because they didn't get what you got.
I can agree with you on that.
You know,
they
didn't get to honor their voice, mm-hmm. you know.
Yes.
So they have to think something of value is in the world.
Yes,
right?
Yes. And I do totally understand, you know, when I have been around my very wealthy friends, mm-hmm. and they are as happy to be with me as I am to be with them.
Right.
And it's their reason isn't because I
because you're going to bring them more money.
Well.
Right, right, right. No, it's because you bring that thing.
Yes.
That, yes, I know. I know.
Yes.
I know. Okay, so now we need to say something about Bubbling Brown Sugar.
Absolutely.
So talk about it some.
Well, Bubbling Brown Sugar is an iconic piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it was what the one of, if not the first, one of the first Broadway, African-American Broadway musicals. Mm-hmm. That was a huge success and won Tonys and all that kind of, all the stuff that we hope for Broadway production.
Right.
And, but it was the first time that we had been seen in a certain light on Broadway. And it was our stories. Mm-hmm. And it was the fully produced, you know, the kind of backing that a Broadway production gets.
Yes.
So
it was all honoring.
The glitz and glamour was there. Mm-hmm. The best talent you could imagine. And it was the first time we could say we were on Broadway as a people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that is one of the things that makes this show special.
Yeah.
It's considered a review.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show within a show. So you have this group of people who are playing themselves. They go back in time and they kind of recreate different shows that they were doing in the 20s and 30s. And this show is set in the 70s.
Wow.
So all of these folk who are going back in time are now old in the 70s. And there are some young people who are just discovering themselves, and it is the era of I'm black and I'm proud.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're learning to be proud of all of their history.
Yeah.
So the idea that they have all this Renaissance history in Harlem, and they're these two people who... one is a torch singer, happens to be a white female blues jazz singer, and she knows all the folk up in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
and there's this nerdy guy who has lots of money,
mm-hmm.
and wants to have a good time, and so they decide that they're going to take him on a tour of Harlem. But the tour they take him on is old Renaissance Harlem. It is not the present.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so they take him back to all the different clubs that were really popular, and there are show acts in those clubs.
Yeah, right.
And that's what you get to see.
Right.
And you get to see them enjoying these shows. And so this whole idea that in the 70s, we were experiencing a lot of things that happened. This was just after King was killed and all of that. And we were coming into ourselves and feeling proud about our natural hair and our attire that was Afrocentric and all of that. And creating a whole new language and, you know, sound. We were at the top of the charts,
mm-hmm.
music charts.
Right.
You know, everything, it was a wonderful time for us. And so it was a celebration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of that feeling of a certain kind of freedom.
Yes.
To be. And acceptance of...
Of what you are.
Of self.
Of self, exactly. Exactly.
Which is... Gosh,
all there is.
All there is.
That's all there is.
That's what I learned early.
Yes, that's what you learned early. That's
so,
right.
Yes.
Right.
So then... this whole group of people decide that they're going to take this guy on this tour of Harlem, which he's never done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's expecting to see what he thinks Harlem is, which was in the 70s, kind of shady and blighted.
Yeah, still coming out of the,
still,
right out of the
yes,
50s and 60s. Right?
Yes, exactly. And so... The idea that there was a Harlem that
shone.
Was just shined like
right,
a
right,
diamond.
Right, right, right.
That's what they wanted him to experience.
And
then he could appreciate
yes.
the Harlem that is now. And so that's what happens. What I'm choosing to do with this piece
mm-hmm.
is by the end of the show, there is a passage about the future. We need to look to the future. We need to look. And so I am going to use one of the pieces in near the end of the show, God Bless the Child, to make a statement on the present and this whole idea of stand your ground.
Oh, yeah.
And the finale of the show is huge, big, musical, lots of tapping and all of this and beautiful costumes and all of that. But that will come out of the shroud.
Wow. Yeah.
And that somber God Bless the Child that's got his, who's got his own.
Right.
And the hoodies. And but underneath those hoodies is all of this glitz and glamour. And so you cannot judge a book by its cover. So that's how I'm going to bring this into today.
Oh my God. It's glorious.
So
it's glorious.
Yeah. And I it gives me chills thinking about it, because I know we have to continue to tell our story.
Yes.
And we can't get caught up in the hype of the glitz and forget.
Yes.
What is going on right today.
Right.
And we can still enjoy ourselves, but we cannot forget that we have work to do.
Yes.
And we, until our children are safe.
Right.
We cannot rest.
No.
There is no way. And, so that's how the contribution I want to make to this piece that is, ages old.
Yes.
And...
But it's what you said earlier, which is that whenever you do a piece, you bring to it what you bring to it, and it is not the same as it was.
Absolutely not. Right. I don't know how to reproduce.
And why would you?
And not interested.
Yeah, right.
We're listening to the music, and we're figuring out how we can... use the same music but brighten it. What can we bring to the music? How can we contemporize to some degree some of this music so it is the same music that someone who was living in the 30s would appreciate, but some young 16-year-old would also relate to, because there's a rhythm there that they feel.
Right.
So that we're playing there with this music and, still remaining true.
Of course.
But understanding that, my truth in 2014 has grown from my truth in 1930.
Yes.
And we still have to be able to connect. And that's how we... And then the other thing that I am very serious about is making sure that we continue to utilize the canon of African American literature, keeping it alive. And it's not done
near
all
enough.
Of this literature is not touched nearly enough. And it shouldn't be that an African American theater has to do African American literature. Because it's all literature. And as you will come to know in the future, if I'm around, we're going to be doing some Shakespeare, and we're going to be doing some classics like that. And we will do it from our perspective.
Right. Right. You'll bring to it what you bring to it.
Absolutely.
That's right.
But I think that other mainstream theaters need to take the literature of African American writers and do the same thing.
Yes.
Because many of those stories, all of us are in those stories.
Of course, it's not just the African-American literature.
No.
I mean, it's the story of us, isn't it?
Absolutely. And those stories that only have us in that story as a maid is a lie.
That's right.
That's right.
And we don't need to buy into that. We can take those stories and we can bring truth to it.
Yes.
And that does not take away from the story.
Of course not. No.
So we I think as artists and as people who work in the theater who have a mantle must take the responsibility to bring the truth of our existence to the forefront, because that's how we're going to walk together. We only can walk together in truth.
Now, I'm going to take what I'm going to say now out.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was thinking was, I don't know if you've seen any of what they're doing at the Oslo?
Not a lot.
Well, for the past 2 years, Michael Edwards has committed to, this is his vision, portraying the American character.
Yes, I'm aware of that because I've read that. I've not seen a lot of it, but I've read. Okay, so.
Well, it just occurred to me there isn't anything of the African-American literature in it.
And so what does that tell you?
Well, I mean, it's clear what it tells me.
Okay, then.
Yeah, I mean,
so, you know, all I'm doing is trying to speak the truth here.
Yes, I know. I know. And you are speaking the truth.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you
and
are
I
speaking.
Think that it's important that at their they should be using their mantle.
Yeah. I mean, the best they did with that was Showboat.
Right. And, which, I, you know,
which
I have
not,
my
right.
brothers.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So... I think there's another Showboat.
Yes, right, yes.
That's what I think.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
I think that
there is... Oh, there's the real Showboat.
No, I'm saying there is another Showboat with an artist who is willing to tell the whole story.
Right. That's right.
There's another Showboat.
Right.
And it can be done, and it would be accepted.
Right.
So well.
Right, because it would be the truth.
Because it would be the truth.
Right.
So I'm that's what I'm saying, the responsibility of these mainstream theaters.
Yeah.
Take these materials, because they're doing the same thing over and over again.
Oh, God.
Instead of going to this canon that has barely been touched.
Yeah.
And allow it to make them wealthy again.
Yes.
So, so... The reason that West Coast Black Theater Troupe is so incredibly important is because it's one of a handful in the entire country that is coming into its own and becoming stable enough to produce our own stories.
Right. And it's screamingly successful.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
And part of that success... is that it's new.
That's right. You can't see it anywhere else.
Well, yeah, where else are you going to go to see it?
That's right. That's exactly right. That's right.
And so it's upon us
to
make sure, since we have this mantle and the interest, to do our best work.
Right. And to do really what you said, which is to do what you're saying, which is to include other work as well.
Absolutely.
Right. To do the work of... The universal.
We should be just a theater.
Right. I agree.
And we explore every aspect of the theater.
Right. Well, of humanity.
And of humanity.
Right. Yeah.
Because we all were there.
That's right.
None of us have been absent.
No.
We have just chosen to leave certain
things
factions,
out.
Certain things, certain people, everything out to fit our own agenda.
That's right.
But the truth be told, we have always been together.
That's right. That is
this exactly country right. was not built by any one hand.
No, and...
The labor now, I will... we'll have a discussion about that. Okay, because there was some major free labor going on for a long time.
For a long time, right.
And much of what we know of as the beginning of this country was built by us.
That's right.
Brick by brick.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and not only by African Americans, but by the Chinese and by the...
Sure.
I mean, you know, we...
Absolutely.
We were an equal opportunity, you know, a abuser here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No question about it. No question.
I'm not going to be able to get all this in the interview.
Of course not.
Yeah, right,
okay.
Right, right. I would like to.
We can do it in two parts.
We could almost do it in two parts.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much. If you give me enough music for Bubbling Brown Sugar, I could almost make this two shows. How long is
it
going to
run? You know what I'm going to do?
What?
Now.
You're going to give me the rehearsal?
No, this is the tape that you would get.
Oh, can
but it's my only copy. But I'm going to give it to you.
So I can copy it and return it?
And return it.
Definitely.
And I trust that you will do that. Some people I don't trust. Believe me.
I do believe you. Thank you.
Your eyes told me that I can give you this.
Thank you. Yes, we are somewhat of a kindred spirit.
Yes, I do feel that totally.
I do too.
Totally,
I do too. Okay, so I asked this other question. We've mostly been talking about it, but
we haven't talked about any of the actors or any.
No,
any
we don't
of
have
that.
To do that. They're all going to come and see it.
What I will say is that they are great, absolute great designers on this show.
Yeah.
The choreographer is brilliant.
Who's the choreographer?
He's Donald Friesen, and he's been in several shows. I've used him for years in my shows around the country. But he is just a wonderful dancer and performer, and a lot of people will remember him from that.
Yeah.
But they don't know him as a choreographer.
Ah.
And he is just brilliant. And so I'm so excited that he gets to show his work fully.
Yeah, yeah.
And unlike some directors, you know, they just want what they want, and they don't realize that the choreographer is a whole artist in and of himself, and has something to say, too.
Right.
And so, but because I understand that we work well together and have through the years. So that's exciting for me. And the cast is A1.
That won't surprise anybody who's come to see other productions.
Well, what will surprise a lot of people is that they will see some dance that is truly professionally done, and you would think you were at a professional dance concert.
Wow.
The dancing will be phenomenal, and there are proficient people doing it.
It's great.
The singing is always great.
Yeah, right.
And we have great voices in the show. But I think that what will be extra exciting is the choreography and the staging. And Dr. Leteri Butler, who has a history with this show in New York and, you know, national and international touring. So
what is he doing?
He's the music director.
So
we are working this show. It will be a new Bubbling Brown Sugar.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm just looking forward to people coming, having already seen it years ago on Broadway or whatever. They know what that is. And then they will get a totally different treat when they come here. Because, first of all, they're seeing it in a house that puts them inside of the show.
Yeah.
They're not...
Yes.
Separate from it.
That's right.
And
that's
right. The show will be built to involve them, not to separate them. So.
I think that's a perfect place to stop.
Good, okay.
If I can't have my voice, then I'm not interested. Imagine saying that. Is that how you feel? That if an opportunity comes up, the very first thing you are asking yourself is, can I have my voice in this opportunity? Well, if you are someone who asks that question first, congratulations to you. Maybe you, like Harry Bryce, are finding a way to spread that option, to let other people know that that is a way that one can be in the world, and that when one is that in the world, then one is not only at peace, but at exuberance. You can hear it in Harry. The exuberance of being the man that he is and living the life that he lives, because it is his life. I could not possibly have found a better proponent of what it is I am trying to say with the show. And again, if you were listening to the first half, you heard us talk about this and about the way that Harry tries to help the young people who he works with to discover what they may have left behind. It is my hope that if you have left something behind, you are in the presence of someone like Harry Bryce to help you recover it. So this was a long interview, and I didn't want to cut any more than I had to, so I'm running out of time. I'm hopefully going to play a little bit of Sweet Georgia Brown, a song from Bubbling Brown Sugar, if there's time on the way out. But let me say that I hope you got something that you can use from this show. Something that you didn't know, which you now know. Something that made you laugh, like Harry and me. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And I certainly hope you will be, too.
No gal made has got a shade on Sweet Georgia Brown. Two left feet, but oh so neat has Sweet Georgia Brown. They all sigh and wanna die for Sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why. You know I don't lie. Not much. It's been said she knocks 'em dead when she lands in town. Since she came, why, it's a shame how she cools 'em down. Fellas that she can't get, or fellas that she ain't met. Georgia named her, Georgia claimed her, Sweet Georgia Brown.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night.